time.
Time is now!
Driven by Briggs Auto Lane.
Let's have some fun. Let's go!
And BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
We're back here for hour two of the game. John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, Mitch Fortner will be joined by Rex Hudler in just a moment from Fox Sports Kansas City. In hour two, we do have a couple of fairly breaking things to get to you. Kelis Robinette from the Kansas City Star, Wichita Eagle, has put out an article with some more information on the new K-State hoops transfer, Motto Sala. There are some quotes from both he and his head coach at Mount St. Mary's that I think most people will like to hear, fairly encouraging. So we'll get that to you later on in the hour. Plus, Mike Moustakas getting after it with a Boston reporter in the clubhouse today, apparently, regarding some of the trade rumors surrounding Moustakas. So that is interesting as well. But for now, we want to bask in what the Royals have been doing here as of late. They went 3-4 over the Angels this weekend and now find themselves just 3.5 back in the division and 2 back in the wild card race. They have totally played themselves back into things, and it's been really fun to watch. We welcome in our friend Rex Hudler from Fox Sports Kansas City. And back from that West Coast swing, Rex, how fun was that to watch the Royals play the way they did on the West Coast?
Oh, thanks for calling me, friend. It's great to be back home here at the K. But it was nice. It's one of the best West Coast trips I've ever been a part of in my playing days, my broadcasting days, especially when you win like that. And you're the little three cities with San Diego, San Francisco, Anaheim, very short flights in between, and the weather was perfect. So, look, the only thing that would have made it better is if we'd have ran the whole road trip and win. But, you know, it's just that's not that easy in Major League Baseball. But our guys are playing much better.
Rex Hudler again talking with us here. You know, the power numbers for this team have been up so much from what we've seen the last couple of years. What do you attribute that to mostly?
I'm going to say maturity, pitch recognition. That's usually what happens to a player once you get a little bit older. When you get a little bit older, even on the pitching side, you know, you learn how to hit your spots better. You know, the less is more. I think that these guys are able to recognize their pitches when they're up there. Salvi's hunting fastballs, and he's also utilizing the opposite field right now. It's been fun to watch Haas, Moose has been so consistent from the very first day of the season till now. He has been the same, and he doesn't need to change a thing because he's just locked in. He's really got a great lower body, lower half right now. He's not getting too far out ahead of himself, and really trusting his hands. It's been fun to see these guys perform like that, like they're capable.
Rex, I was watching the games over the weekend and listening to you describe Lorenzo Cain. Are you concerned that you're going to run out of items to describe as hot as Lorenzo Cain? You said lava hot, white hot, scalding hot. I mean, what's the next step up here?
No, really. A lot of things come out of my mouth sometimes that really aren't well thought out. But I can tell you, lava hot as a player can get. Because lava comes from the center of the earth. That's it. It don't get any hotter. That or the sun. But you know what I heard from scientists, now I'm not a scientist, but that center of the earth, the core in there, oh, that's as hot as it can get. And the low cane lean back, oh, I think they should turn that into a dance. No question. I should have some choreograph or some kind of a dancer figure out how we could incorporate that low cane lean back, because when he hits them, that little back, man, I'd have to do 5 years worth of yoga to bend my back like
I love that, the low cane lean back being a dance. We do need to make that happen. Rex Hudler talking with us here from Fox Sports Kansas City. What's it like when you are lava hot as a player? How much different are things when you step into the batter's box at the plate when you're as hot as low cane is right now?
Oh, you know, it's a very, very nice place to be. It's a place that you're not very often, and you don't stay long. But when you're there, you just enjoy it. You don't overdo it. You don't continue to go out to the cage and keep hitting and hitting and hitting, when maybe you might just take a few swings and say, all right, I'm locked. And the ball looks big. When you get in the box, your feet are happy, even though you want to keep them quiet. You dig in that batter's box, you're saying, all right, get ready to run, because I'm going to make some contact. And that's exactly how you feel. The ball looks big. You know it doesn't matter who's pitching either. And that your swing is short, you're in that groove. Unfortunately, only Ted Williams, maybe a George Brett, somebody like that would be able to sustain that type of lava hot for a long period of time, but usually it might last a couple of weeks at best.
Rex, in the first hour, we were talking about the new rallying cry for the Royals, Peter Moylan's espresso machine, and the other guys are saying that that's more significant than the rally mantis from last year, but you strike me as a rally mantis kind of guy. Which one is more significant to you?
Hey, look, the mantis has a short life. I like the fact that the espresso is a fun thing. The guys can all serve each other. But I can tell you from experience that during the course of a long baseball season, and every season I've ever played was long, you're looking for sources of inspiration. You're looking for the mantis. You're looking for little rallying cries that can kind of help you get through the monotonous of the day, even though being a big leaguer is not a monotonous job. Now, being a 10-year minor leaguer, that was monotonous. There's no money. You're going to the ballpark living on a dream and a hope and a prayer. But as a big leaguer, you need sources of inspiration at times, and I love it. I think the espresso is great, although it doesn't do much for me, caffeine, because when you're wired like I am, it actually brings me down. I think my teammates, they wish I did amphetamines, believe it.
Well, yeah, Rex Uther's talking with us here. I was going to ask you, like, what was, if you were dragging at the ballpark, what was your go-to pickup?
My go-to pickup was watching the news before I went to the ballpark and watching some of the channels and what's going on in the world and how difficult people can be. The guy who lost his job, and he's got three or four kids that he's got to support. That was all I needed when I get in my car and I come to the ballpark, no matter how I was feeling. Are you kidding? It's all about perspective. I knew that when I would go to the ballpark, and if I pulled over and saw somebody working on the side of the road or somebody doing a different job, and I rolled down my window and said, hey, I'm going to the ballpark today. Do you want to come? They would drop their tools and everything, and they would jump in the car for one day in the majors. So that was what I did. Honestly, I had perspective. By the time I walked into the clubhouse, even though I was hitting a buck 40 and we were 30 games out of first place, I had perspective. And then once I got to that clubhouse door, I said, okay, man, this is heaven. And as I opened each door in the big leagues, there was a bright ray of light that shined as I went in the door. And it's all about perspective, believe that.
Love it. Rex Uther from Fox Sports Kansas City with us here. You know, I was reading the article in the Star about the espresso machine, and this actually struck me as interesting. Maybe it's just me, but they were talking about Lorenzo Cain loathing, I think was the word, day games. Is that common amongst major leaguers? Do most guys not like day games?
Well, that depends on how you're wired and your makeup. Yeah, most baseball players know it's a night game. It's a nighttime game. There's very few, maybe one a week. And we are getting better. Our record is little by little. I think we're a couple under 500 during the day games. But, you know, day games, it just takes a lot for a lot of guys to get their muscle memory working. And that's exactly what they're trying to do, muscle memory. And that's what their ball players go on. Ball players, when you're in a slump for a while and you're struggling, you know, then all of a sudden you get back in the groove. You go, oh, yeah, this is how it goes. So I some guys are like that. For me, I was the opposite. I'm a morning person. If you're a morning person, you don't have any problem playing during the day. If you're a night person and you sleep late in the morning, then you're going to have some trouble. But that's just the way it is. There's, you know, all kinds of people, and we're all built differently.
Well, before I let you go, Rex, and I do want to ask for a bus driver tonight as well, but I'm going to stick up for you here for a second because there was so much grief that you got for the shot of the shark that was out in San Francisco and calling it a carp.
Oh, man, I knew it. I didn't know it was a shark. I guarantee it ain't. A lot of other people didn't know it was either.
Well, see, that's what when I saw it, I didn't immediately think shark either. Like, I did not. Tyler's giving me a look right now, but I'm with you, Rex. I did not think shark right away when I saw that.
Well, and, you know, that's the thing. When you got a shallow mind and a small mind like mine, and, you know, you're on a live broadcast, sometimes, you know, stuff comes out. The spontaneity is not always going to be accurate. That's just part of the job. It's part of the whole thing of it. You know, I'm a baseball guy. I'm not a fisherman, although it did bring memories back of going over to the Truman Lake. You know, it's not too far from Kansas City here. I love fishing, but I've never seen a shark with look like a tiger on the back.
Yeah, I haven't either at all. So I don't blame you. And you know what? That's another one of those things.
If you remember, guys, if you remember how I was swimming, it looked sick. It looked like it was sick just sitting up there in the water flipping, and it didn't look like it was very big. So, you know, my first you know, I'm thinking, maybe what is that, a carp? You know, and I know I could feel everybody laughing. In the booth, they were laughing at me. But look, it is what it is, but it's fun and interesting. And part of baseball that happens every single night, one of the reasons I get so excited about coming to the ballpark is we never know what we're going to see.
That's what I like, that it broke up the monotony of a broadcast in the season. It just makes things more fun. I like what you bring there.
That's what it is now. And plus, I'm accustomed over the 18 years of broadcasting of laughing to, at myself and laughing, you know, I laugh with everybody that laughs at me because some of this stuff is funny, but I don't sometimes necessarily mean for it to be funny, but it's a lot of fun, and I'm very thankful, especially for Ryan and Fizz and Holsey, who's up in the booth, and all the people that we get to work with, especially when you have a product like this, championship caliber.
Well, Rex, before I let you go, who's going to be the bus driver against the Red Sox tonight?
I'm just driving the bus, believe it.
All right, there we go, Rex.
He just walked by me. Okay. Yeah, he saw him. He looked at me and smiled. I'm right here in the hitting cages underneath the dugout here doing my show with you guys, and they're all taking notes from Dale Swain. It's their hitter's meeting going on right now.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, but hey, look, that could be a good choice there. Who's going to be with me? You, anybody agree with me, with Haas?
I'll take that one. Sure.
Yeah. Yep. I trust you, Rex. I'll take Hosmer all day.
Fellas, I love being on with you, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rex. Appreciate the time, as always. There's Rex Hudler from Fox Sports Kansas City with us here on The Game, man. That was one of the better Rex Hudler appearances we've had. I enjoy that a lot.
Planet Earth, narrated by Rex Hudler.
That's a pretty solid idea.
Would watch, available on Blu-ray coming this fall.
That's a very solid idea. I like that. We roll on here in hour two. We have some more info at 5:40 on the K-State men's hoops transfer. Some quotes from his coach at Mount St. Mary's, which is where he's leaving, that I think will encourage you about what he's going to do here in Manhattan. But when we come back, so many people that are Royals fans around here seem to hate Joe Buck. If you hate Joe Buck, you'll want to hear the next segment. You're listening to The Game. Well, you know, if you're a baseball player and you go 1-for-3 for your career, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame. Hit 333 all time.
I know how to say it.
That's not bad.
I just get my own head when it comes up because I can see it halfway down this little thing here, and I freak myself out.
At least once a show, I really wish that I had access to the buttons from the match game. Because I would just love to just do the buzzer as soon, like during your update.
That'd
as soon funny. As you as soon as you screw it up.
I'm not going to be that mean to him. But I think it was punishment enough that we started laughing, and then you had to try and make
you
it.
Got me.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then you had to make it through without totally losing it laughing. I enjoyed that. Thank you, Mitch. We will give you some more info on what's his name,
Mado Sala.
Are we going with Motto?
It's Motto.
How sure
Motto
are we that solid? It's Motto? Do we even know that we're saying it right?
Well, I watched three videos last night of him pronouncing his own name, and he does kind of, I mean, he's from West Africa, so he's got a heavy accent, but Motto Sala was what I
Sala.
What I could
Sala.
Put together.
Motto Sala.
So,
Motto okay. Sala.
I have done the research on this.
Motto Sala. 6'9", 235 pounds, Mount St. Mary's.
And we'll be batting 500 by the end of this show.
Yeah, you got
it. I promise you.
That'll be big. That's big, because the difference between 2-for-4 and 1-for-4 is pretty large.
Nobody should be surprised about this, though.
Well, I mean,
some four name like that and Mitch Fortner, that combination. It's scary.
It's tough. I will admit, it's tough. I freak myself out with it a little bit as well. But we do have some more information on him from an article that Kellis put out. I retweeted it. J.L. Kurtz, if you want to read it in the meantime, but some good quotes from his coach, which is interesting because he's leaving Mount St. Mary's along with four other guys that are basically, you know, being, like I use the AAA to the majors example, they were like the farm system for these bigger schools that they're going to, and he spoke very highly of Sala coming here to K-State. Get to the Joe Buck mistake in just a moment, but I have been alerted to the fact that Mitch has already been bored enough, despite that great Rex Hudler interview, to tweet two WTF facts today.
Since Mitch is bored with the show, it's time for his WTF fact of the day.
And I'm like, WTF is going on around here.
Tyler claims to know the first one. He was
Yeah,
he was
I heard about it
aware.
As well. Yeah.
Yep. I did not know that.
It's I knew about it because Neil deGrasse Tyson talked about it one time.
And it is,
if the Earth stopped spinning for 1 second, or for any period of time, really, and you weren't belt buckled to the Earth, you would fall over and you would roll due east at 800 miles an hour. 800 miles an hour is how fast you'd be flying straight to the east if the Earth stopped spinning.
So, like, you'd die.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when Neil deGrasse Tyson pointed that out, he also said if you were belt buckled to the Earth, then that just means that your head would snap off and it would roll due east at 800 miles an hour.
Well, okay. So you're not winning at all. What if it stopped for like a tenth of a second? Does that mean you're only going 80 miles an hour and then maybe you stand a chance?
I don't know. We're gonna
That'd be like being thrown around in a tornado or something, right? I mean, like 80 miles an hour?
we'll be able to survive that. We'll try to book Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Let's get Neil deGrasse Tyson. That would
He'd
be great.
Able to answer that.
Mm-hmm. What's number two on?
Number two, Ben Affleck dropped out of college after his creative writing teacher ridiculed an early draft of the Good Will Hunting screenplay.
Are we sure, though, that this isn't like the Michael Jordan tale that always gets told that he got cut from his high school team when really it was that as a freshman he just didn't make the varsity team? And it gets over-dramatized? Like, maybe, I don't know what the example would be here. She just corrected one thing about it, and then that turns into, well, hey, the teacher didn't like Good Will Hunting, and that's why Ben Affleck was inspired to do this whole thing. I'm skeptical. I will just say that. I'm skeptical of that one. If Neil deGrasse Tyson's behind the first, I will believe that because I believe in science. But don't know that science is going to cover that Ben Affleck one. All right, I am one of the few people that seems to stick up for Joe Buck around here. I think in the 2014 World Series, everyone needs to get over it. Madison Bumgarner was the story, and he appropriately talked about what the story was of the World Series, a historic pitching performance. But I know there are a lot of you that just crave hating on Joe Buck. And if you do, you're going to enjoy this mistake that he had while calling the U.S. Open over the weekend, which I watched none of. Didn't even realize it was on Fox. But Joe Buck is talking about the winner, this is another name I just don't know. Guy I hadn't heard of.
Yeah, Brooks Koepka or Koepka.
I think it's Koepka.
Like
Koepka. So he wins, and they're showing a shot of him hugging his girlfriend, and this is what transpires. I apologize. Every bit of audio I could find has part of it cut off here in the middle. You'll understand what I mean, but I think you can still get the gist of what happens here when the camera pans to the winner of the U.S. Open and his girlfriend.
His girlfriend, Becky Edwards, All-American soccer player at Florida State.
Joe, that's actually his new girlfriend. That's Jenna Sims. They were all staying together this week.
That's a pretty good foot-in-your-mouth moment. You mistake the current girlfriend for the ex-girlfriend.
Yep.
So before I offer up what I think actually happened here, if you want to get some shots in at Joe Buck, the stage is now yours. You can step right up, take whatever shots you want here at
I think you know that I buried that hatchet. You know, we're moved on past that now. It is still kind of funny, but at the same time, as I've talked about before, I hate the secondhand embarrassment kind of aspect of this. I don't like watching news bloopers or everything like that because I think about what it would be like if and when I make a mistake like that. But kind of funny just because of the
You just spent 5 minutes making fun of Mitch for a blooper.
That's Mitch. Well, that's Mitch.
Sorry, Mitch. I guess
those are a daily. Yeah. I'm over it.
I guess you're not as important as
Joe Buck. He's not Joe Buck.
Okay.
But it is funny, and you know what I didn't realize here is that he went from an All-American soccer player at Florida State to someone who is an actress in the Sharknado movies. So I don't know if you would view that as an upgrade or not. But
I think that's definitely an upgrade. More people have watched Sharknado than college soccer. I would guess, only because Sharknado became such a pop culture, you know, like, would you call it like a cult favorite or whatever? Has kind of a cult following?
They're coming out with a Sharknado 5 in August.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
What?
Hopefully his girlfriend is in there. Is this Jabroni of the Week? Does this qualify as like Jabroni of the Week?
Oh, yeah.
Type of material?
So or he's in the runner? Or as Rex would call it, Carpnado 5.
Yeah, well, here's my theory on what happened here. I think Joe Buck probably had a card or something handed to him with that information because this guy is not a golfer that anyone was expecting to win. Maybe he did do his own research on it, but so much of that, especially I've never done golf, obviously, play-by-play. I don't know the ins and outs of how that would work, but with so many golfers there and all the info that you're going to need. I would think maybe they have someone from their research team doing that, and they mistook. Yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. They mistook who his girlfriend actually was right there and handed it to Joe Buck, and then he just has to be the bearer of bad news to deliver it to his own humiliation there. That's my theory on what happened here. Now, call me a Joe Buck apologist if you want. I think it's more just the play-by-play guy in me that feels bad because I know that things like that could happen, and then you are the one that winds up getting roasted for it. But I really do truly think that there's a good shot that's what happened.
Joe Buck said, or quipped, that his partner was up to date on, quote, all the PGA Tour gossip.
Ah, okay.
So that was part of the call as well.
Just trying to play it off?
Yeah.
That's not a bad way to just play it off real quick and try and get away from
it. I didn't know that you could put PGA Tour and gossip in the same sentence, but apparently you can.
Oh, come on. Tiger Woods.
Well,
Tiger Woods.
In the post-Tiger era, yeah.
It's been like 8 solid years of gossip. When in 2009, we're going on a decade under the influence of gossip for golf.
It's been 9 years and 4 days since Tiger last won a major.
And there you go. You Can't Be Serious coming up at 5:50 when we come back. More information, including quotes from K-State's new transfers head coach, Mount St. Mary's coach, on what he'll bring to the table. Plus, we take a look at some comparisons for this new transfer that K-State's bringing in here on the game. Mitch, we've already received a complaint about the weather forecast today. Now you're going to interrupt it with the name of K-State's new transfer?
Practice makes perfect.
Okay. All right, gearing up for that big final game sports update that's coming up. If you're just joining the show, Mitch has mispronounced Mato Sala's name 2 out of 3 updates so far. He's trying to get to 50% by the end of the show. He knows good and well how to pronounce it, but we started talking about it so much it got in his head, and it's bit him twice in a row.
Mitch, just to make you feel a little better, you know, I'm a coach on a City League baseball team. I did not know that we had a game tonight until 5 minutes ago, and now I've got to leave the show early. So
he won't even hear the final verdict.
Wait,
there.
I won't.
How do you not know when your team is playing?
Well, I knew that I know that we have games Mondays and Thursdays. I just had not thought about it
today.
Think
that Yost ever forgets? It's like, oh, man, I got to get to the ballpark.
I bet he does.
I got a game.
He likes hunting more than baseball.
Hmm. Okay. So he's sitting there reading his, I don't know, Hunting Weekly magazine and just like...
Let's go with Field and Stream.
Maybe, okay, well, I don't know hunting magazines. Okay, well, I guess I got to get to the ballpark. That's right, baseball game today. 537-1350, 866-776-1350. If you got a phone call, the Game KMAN on Twitter, if you want to communicate with us as well. All right, so before I give you the info on Justin Edwards and Stephen Hurt, how they did transferring from a similar level that Mato Sala will be transferring from to K-State, here's some bits of info from the story that Kellis Robinette put up from the Wichita Eagle and Kansas City Star. One thing that did take me by surprise that I did not know, I guess take me by surprise, probably wrong, but it was new information. A guy that did come from West Africa, he's only been playing basketball since the age of 16. So when you're talking about ceilings and improvement that guys can make, if they have not been playing as long, obviously they would stand to have further to potentially improve just with more repetition of playing basketball. So that is fairly encouraging, I would say. Also, we found out that K-State had been recruiting him and looking at him before they wound up getting McCall Maywein and Ahmad Wainwright, two JUCO guys that came in. And according to Mato himself, he was devastated in his own words that all of a sudden a spot was not there for K-State. He was then going to go to UNC Wilmington. But when he found out about the Isaiah Maurice news, K-State gets back in touch with him. He very quickly jumped on that, and he had only signed a financial aid agreement at UNC Wilmington. So he was able to get out of that. It was not binding. Now, this is the part that really does surprise me, because we're talking about a team that, again, is losing 5 players from an NCAA tournament conference title team last year that are all transferring other places, one of which going to Texas. Now you have Sala coming to K-State. But the coach, Jamin Christian, is quoted here as basically saying he's thrilled that Sala is going to be able to go to K-State because he had been so heartbroken about not getting there. But you would just think in this scenario, the coach who spends time and devotes resources to developing these guys, to see them jump off to bigger schools, greener pastures, so to speak, here after they've had a great season, it surprises me that he comes out and is now advocating for these guys, trying to help them out individually as opposed to his own team.
It may indicate that coaches of these lower division, lower conference teams have almost learned their role in a certain sense, that they know that they are the AAA franchises or the AAA clubs to the Power Five conferences, and they hope that they can get guys to do that. And maybe that's their selling point when they're recruiting kids is, look, we're almost like a JUCO, but hey, at least at this JUCO, you can actually go to the big dance if you help us win a conference tournament, and then you can move on to bigger and better things if you actually reach your potential, reach that point.
I suppose there's an aspect of maybe you look at it as good publicity. If these guys go on to have big careers, get your name out there, hey, come to Mount St. Mary's, we'll get you ready for the big time, but that just seems like a tough way to live and go about it. But it is just a part of college basketball right now, the way the rules are constructed, so I guess you learn to live with it and deal with it the best you can, and it sounds like he's doing that. Now, a phrase that really caught my attention, he said that this guy was a great locker room guy. He used the word galvanized our locker room. So someone that galvanizes a locker room, I would take as a pretty good sign here with him coming into K-State. So he wasn't talking as much about his skills on the floor, although he did say they're getting a guy who can come in right away, make an impact, and help. But most of what he was talking about was guy with a good attitude who's had experience playing in high-pressure situations, which you did point out in the first hour with how much he's played not only in the NCAA tournament, but also just against NCAA tournament-caliber teams. He's going to come in with as much NCAA tournament experience as anybody on K-State's roster, because they did the same thing last year, win a first four game and then go lose in the round of 64 in the NCAA tournament. So there is that as well. Now, I will caution you to getting your hopes way up, because again, this is just a 6-5 guy in the RPI number 30 conference last year, the Northeast Conference. But Justin Edwards came from Maine here to K-State directly with a year in between, so he even had a chance to sit out and get acclimated here in Manhattan. Stephen Hurt was a freshman of the year in, I believe, the Atlantic Sun Conference at Lipscomb. Then he went to junior college before coming to K-State. But both of those guys had a lot of success at similar places before making the big jump up to Big 12 basketball. And, you know, I think at best you would say the results were just very mixed. Justin Edwards really seemed to struggle his first year. Now, everybody struggled that year, and that was, of course, the Marcus Foster bottoming out season in 2014-15. By the end of Justin Edwards' career, he's a guy that was averaging 13-6-3. He was a solid contributor. Turned out to be a solid player, but it took some time. He really had to get used to it, get his feet under him. Stephen Hurt, don't want to disparage the guy, but to me, I mean, he was disappointing based on, I think, what the expectations were for him. Wichita State had wanted him really bad, and K-State was very excited to get him. And his best year was just 6 points, 4 rebounds, never shot better than 45% from the field. So it can be a very mixed bag of what these guys do. It's really hard to tell. Remember Freddie Espria as well? Freddie Espria comes in from Canisius with high expectations, and he didn't even make it through a whole season for Frank Martin. You can remember back that far. So really, when K-State has taken guys from smaller schools, I would argue that most of the time it's been fairly disappointing in terms of the results.
Yes, but that's where you have to measure what expectations are for this guy versus for Justin Edwards or Stephen Hurts. We were hoping that they would come in and immediately contribute double figures. I think that in Sala's case, you're talking about a player who you are hoping can give you something like 5-5 and a couple of blocks and just take up space in the middle and just give you some, you know, relief at that five position. You're not asking him to come in and be the leading scorer on your team or even the second or the third or the fourth, maybe not even the fifth leading scorer. So I think that when you take that into consideration, you can be a little bit more excited about the possibility of him reaching his potential or what your expectations would be.
That is true. I think that's fair. The expectations for Justin Edwards in particular were pretty high, mainly based on like his athleticism. He was a big-time scorer. He scored like 16 a game at Maine and had some good games against high-profile teams that they played in their non-conference. So I think he's a classic case of we did build the expectations up too high. Stephen Hurt had, as I mentioned, fairly high expectations, but not quite as high as Justin Edwards. Sala, you are just looking for defense and rebounding, mainly as we really outlined in the open of the show. So perhaps because of the expectation level, he is set up to have more success relative to what everyone is expecting here at K-State. 537-1350, 866-776-1350 to call us. We'll fit in Charles from Wamego here real quick. What's on your mind, Charles?
Hey, John. Well, you just covered basically the main point I was going to make. Justin Edwards was a really good player in the America East. He, like you said, he was 15 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists a game. Plus, he set out a year here. Plus, the America East is better than the Northeast, just simply put. I mean,
right.
The America East, you back in those years, you had Vermont with Coppenrath and Sorrentine that actually won a tournament game. You know, Stephen Hurt was in the Ohio Valley, you know, and people remember Murray State and Moorhead State. I mean, Northeast, like I said, 30th in the RPI, that is a bad league. And if we get out of him what we got out of Stephen Hurt, we'll be lucky.
Different type of player, obviously. So, I mean, that changes things. Hurt always wanted to play on the perimeter. I think that's not what you expect here, but I get your point. If you're talking numbers, 6-4, yeah, you would take it.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's what the program's become, and it's just disappointing to see the program just slide down every year. And, boy, I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye. Yeah, appreciate it, Charles. I mean, part of the issue here, too, is that we're talking about picking up a guy on June 19th. So when you're this late in the game, I mean, it's tough to lose a guy like Maurice this late in the game. I mean, a lot of these transfers have already found homes. So, again, I'll give him credit. I mean, this is a decent find considering where things are at. But I do raise legitimate questions about how much he will actually contribute when it comes down to it this year. We'll get You Can't Be Serious before we are out of here on this edition of the game coming up.
Gosh, he's beautiful.
Did you hear that?
So, we'll open it up to questions.
Johnny Idiot Face over there is never going to bring you a title.
This guy sucks.
Cliff Kingsbury gets me hot and bothered, and I love it. There, I said it. That was from a man.
I'm a 4-3 wide receiver. Why should I play at Michigan?
You are?
That was a clunk. There's not much I can do about that.
You can't be serious.
Got some follow-up here on the Joe Buck gaffe. He mistakenly called the winner of the U.S. Open's girlfriend that he was hugging his ex-girlfriend's name. I tell you this in all honesty. I did not listen to the Dan Patrick Show, which did air on our airwaves earlier today. I'm sorry, DP. Joe Buck went on the DP show and discussed this whole fiasco, and he said, here's a quote, "I got handed a card by a buddy who was phenomenal all week, and it had old info on it." So whether you believe him or not, I suppose, is a different thing. But my theory, without knowing that, I did not know that, but like 2 segments ago I said my theory is he got handed a card by somebody who was trying to do research for him, and that is why he messed it up.
That's probably 100% true.
Now, not only that, but he said this is not even close to his worst mistake of this ilk. He said once upon a time he was asking Diamonds infielder Tony Womack at the end of a division series game when he was hugging a woman down on the field. It had just been Father's Day, and he lost his father on Father's Day that year. So he asked Tony Womack, "Hey, I can imagine how that feels. It's emotional. Who are you hugging down there? Is that your mom?" And Tony Womack looked at him and said, "No, that's my wife."
Wow.
So not quite as bad as that mistake.
Well, that's a pretty bad one. The one that happened at the U.S. Open, he probably shook that off real quick because it's not his fault. Even though the people watching don't know, that's not his fault. I mean, we both have limited TV experience, me very little, but we don't have that luxury, do we? It's all somebody's in your ear counting you down to breaks and all that, maybe giving you some, you know, what's going to come next graphic wise but other than that, that's it, man. It's all on you. All right, I'm gonna go to the Boston Red Sox Houston Astros game yesterday, bottom of the second. This is in Houston, it's at Minute Maid. Houston's already up 3-0 and 2 outs. George Springer is to the plate. Well, he sends one of those very confusing ground balls that can mess with fans a little bit. It's one of those, you know, it's close to the line, and then once it hits the line past third base, it rolls into foul territory and hits the seating area, you know, the edge of the seating area where fans can, you know, reach down and try to grab the foul ball.
Right.
Well, typical situation where a fan made a mistake, thought it was a foul ball, went to grab it. It was not. It was a fair ball. And it was an older gentleman who is a Houston fan. And he touches the ball, realizes it's a bad thing to do, so he lets it go. and he just kind of plays it cool. Well, security goes down there because it's a rule that if you mess with a foul ball or with a fair ball in foul territory, and you try to pick it up and mess with the game, you get tossed. So security comes down there, but they're not exactly sure who it is. Well, two seats to the right was this young kid and a Red Sox jersey. And as soon as security comes over, he rats this guy out. He is pointing over at this guy saying, he did it, he did it. And the guy's looking at this kid like, what are you doing? Why? And then as soon as the security guard points him out, he gets right up and leaves. He did the right thing, what he's supposed to do, and gets up and leave. And Houston won 7-1 anyway, so the game was already over at that point, even though it was only the second inning. But Houston went on to win. But that kid, man. If he's even from Boston, he's gonna learn real quick that being a rat is not a good thing.
Well, how old would you guesstimate that this child was?
I would say.
I think that's a key factor here.
8 or 9.
See, that's close. That's like bordering because, I mean, kids have no filter and they just sort of go for it. They're not taking into consideration all the things that we would take into consideration necessarily. I'm gonna cut him some slack. Because the no filter thing, I think, applies here. Guy's close. It's like right on the borderline of where I would say, all right, it's fair to say, man, you can't really be a snitch there.
He's almost a young adult.
Yeah, he does look almost more like 10 or 11. So,
yeah, maybe.
I'm going to ride the fence. I know that's not what I'm supposed to do as a sports talk host. I'm going to ride the fence.
Get in the game.
Just like trying to play me off the stage here?
Yeah. That's start towing, wrap up.
Start towing the fence. I get played off the stage. All right, well, guess I can get out of here. That'll do it for the show today. Great interview with Rex Hudler if you missed that. Not only the podcast page, newsradiokman.com, the on-demand tab, but we're in the iTunes store. Search for The Game KMAN. The iTunes, like, podcast. You know what I'm talking about. You can find it there. Much easier to listen to. We'll see you tomorrow. Next.